the last area, and I know I don't have much time, is the notion of real economic hedging. And I'll cut to the chase here. In this case, we've got a U.S. company with a subsidiary, in this case in Fredonia, to protect the innocent. What's typically done in this case is that the Fredonian sub would issue what's called a Yankee bond, a U.S. dollar denominated bond, because the Fredonian capital markets are not evolved at all. And then they'd enter into a cross-currency swap to hedge out the dollar exposure and create synthetic Fredonian debt. Under 133, this clearly doesn't work and doesn't even fall into the net investment realm because the sub doesn't have a net investment that it's hedging. Everything's taking place at the subsidiary level. Now, one way to think about this is to break the cross-currency swap into its component pieces and see where we can go. The Fredonian sub issues U.S. debt, and that debt is foreign. And under 52, that debt gets revalued at the spot exchange. The face amount of that debt gets revalued at the spot exchange rate through income. So you've got one source of exposure there. So the first thing that you'd want to do to offset that exposure is, over at 3 o'clock, a cross-currency basis swap, floating, between Fredonian LIBOR and U.S. dollar LIBOR. Now, like we were just discussing, that swap will change only with spot exchange rates as well. So you do that swap on a purely speculative basis, in quotes, and it will effectively counteract the income statement noise of that piece of debt. But now what have you got? You've got Fredonian LIBOR out, which is good, but you've got U.S. LIBOR coming in and U.S. fixed going out, so you've got a yield curve problem. So what you could do at 6 o'clock is hedge the interest rate exposure between the two by entering into a fair value hedge on the U.S. dollar debt. So in the fair value hedge, XYZ receives U.S. fixed, pays U.S. floating, everything's fine net-net. The only exposure is Fredonian LIBOR going out. You created synthetic Fredonian LIBOR, and the initial and final exchanges of principal work. Now, there's one small issue that, again, different firms have had different views on, but the consensus seems to be, people have noticed that, look, if you're changing the carrying amount of this U.S. dollar debt through this fair value hedge up and down, the notional amount of your basis swap isn't going to match the carrying amount of that debt over time. The derivatives partner at one of the firms said, don't worry about that, you can assume that away. What will the future hold? Who knows? But there is, even in this, there's a potential weakness. But if you can assume that away, then you're okay. But now let's think about this. Suppose that floating rate debt doesn't work for business reasons. Suppose that you need fixed rate debt. Well, you could enter into a Fredonian fixed floating swap in the Fredonian swap markets. But that's not a hedge of anything. That'll have to be marked to market. And again, this is a real world example with a client that said, well, I have to have fixed rate debt. You know, tell me how big a problem I could have. Why'd they have to have fixed rate debt? In this case, it was a power company. They have completely fixed revenues, no ability to, due to regulatory constraints and so forth, no ability to influence price or demand. So their revenues are basically an annuity. You can map out at the Fredonian shilling forward curve, the green bars represent their interest expense. But if you do a VAR analysis at a 95% level, the red bars are their interest expense. Now suppose their revenues are 8 million Fredonian shilling. Obviously floating rate debt can completely destroy shareholder value and present a real problem for them. So what we said is, well, suppose that you just do a 10-year Fredonian interest rate swap and market to market through income. These graphs are probably familiar to you. They represent in this case, I think a 95% confidence level, how far the mark on a swap can stray from zero over 10 years. And obviously the mark can become very large between years 3 and 5, but as the duration of the swap gets shorter and shorter, the swap eventually returns to zero value. So in this case, we said, well, let's just make up a couple of arbitrary scenarios. Let's say that rates go up, the green line, at a 95% confidence level. And then let's say case two, the rates go down at the same sort of confidence level. These are independent of each other. Now what's going to flow through income is the period-to-period change in fair value of that swap. So you're not going to get something like the cat eye pattern before, but something more like the patterns below. So if rates go, the colors are reversed. If rates go down, your swap will be very much underwater because you're paying fixed, and you'll book a big loss up front on the first mark date, revaluation date of the swap. But then over time, that'll reverse out. So the cumulative mark-to-market, the cumulative income statement impact will be zero. It'll just flow through over 10 years, which is a long time. Similarly, if rates go up, you'll book a nice big gain on day one when that first rate up move happens. And then over time, that gain will reverse out. So in the case of at least one power company, they said, great, I can explain this to my investors better than I can explain having a bunch of my annuity streams, you're showing net negative value for my investment over time. Others have looked at this and said, there's no way that my equity investors will tolerate a $15 million loss that I say, really, trust me, it'll come back over 10 years. So again, it's something that you want to, as you think about hedging real economics, you want to understand what you're getting yourself into and think in the context of your industry, your investors, and so on, whether it makes sense. And your balance sheet. Maybe this is vanishingly small in your balance sheet. Maybe it isn't.